Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome back down to the rabbit hole with Rachel. I have returned. I know you guys missed me terribly and I am so sorry, but I was having a blast, let me tell you. Anyway, I am here joined as always by two of my favorite people in the whole world, being, of course, my number one co-host and partner and bestie from another, Mr. The lovely Carl Kafer. Say hello, Carl.
Okay, I have to get off my Golden Mane now. You called me lovely. Okay, hi, guys.
And, of course, coming all the way from, well, Pittsburgh, I believe, we've got TC with us again.
All the way from Pittsburgh. It's not that far if you live here.
Well, I don't.
Okay. All right. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
And so I was thinking that tonight we could start out with like some Yanni or maybe some Enya. I was thinking maybe some real cool slow grooves.
Oh, I got some
Zamfir. We got to start with Zamfir and the pan flute.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yep, you're right. Okay. Yeah, there we go.
Can I play Slim Whitman? No, he sold
absolutely.
More records. He sold more records than the Beatles.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, all of these are great, great choices, but honestly, guys, I think we've got something planned for the evening, and that would be Happy April Fools. Even though it's the second, haha, got you. we are planning on doing some of our favorite stand-up comedians. And I personally, this is one of my all-time favorites ever. I quote this man on a daily basis, and just his one-liners are such fucking zingers. I mean, literally material for days. My favorite, you know, I can levitate birds. No one cares. And, you know, you may know him as the man on the couch from the lovely classic cult movie Half-Baked. And that, of course, is the wonderful eponymous Stephen Wright. I love this man, guys. I don't know about you or anybody else, but I about wore those VHS tapes out from the fucking video store when I was a kid. I just couldn't get enough. So anyway, I always thought it was appropriate. You know, everybody's got their name in a song, including Carl Kafer, by the way. There is a song out there called Carl der Kafer.
And we may have that by the end of the evening. I'm going to try.
Yes, I was trying for that one last night, but it was actually hard to get a good recording of it.
Right.
So I thought it was really appropriate that the only song I've found so far that has my name in it, Rachel, is also the only song that Stephen Lynch sings. Or Stephen Wright, I'm sorry, not Stephen Lynch. Also love him. The only song with my name in it happens to be a comedy song, and it does happen to be from one of my favorite comedians. So I think we can start out with Bowling Ball Noises and Rachel by Stephen Wright.
I'd now like to do my imitation of bowling. Got it. Took me a year and a half to write that. I didn't know how to word it. I don't know how to play this. I'd like to play everything the Beatles ever recorded. I won't do all of Hey Jude. What are these strings for? I want to tell you about the girl I'm seeing now. I met her in Macy's in New York City. She was buying clothes, and I was putting slinkies on the escalators. The girl I'm seeing now, her name is Rachel. She's a very pretty girl. She has emerald eyes and long flowing plaid hair. Last week in August, we went camping way up in Canada. We were laying around in the woods and stuff, and I don't know how she did it, but Rachel got poison ivy on her brain. The only way she could scratch it was if she thought about sandpaper. She's a rich girl. She's from somewhere else. And her father is an incredible millionaire. You know how he made his money? He's the guy who designed that little diagram that shows you which way to put batteries in something. Hey, hey. Rachel, dear, how I wish you were here. Hey, hey, I can almost see you. Having sex with Rachel is amazing. It's like going to a concert, it really is. She yells a lot. She throws frisbees around the room. When she wants more, she lights a match. Hey, hey, Rachel, dear, how I wish you were here. Hey, hey, I can almost see you.
Lovely, lovely Rachel by Stephen Wright. And yeah, I've been known to toss a few frisbees and balls around the room in my day, so.
Yeah, yesterday
that kind of frightens me, tossing balls around the room. Okay, never mind.
You know, yesterday that wasn't me. It's one of his jokes. You know, I read an article about him, like, you know, when I first got interested in him and everything. And, you know, he's from Boston. And he went to an open mic night. And he had everybody howling, rolling on the floor. We got done with his, and there was prizes, you know, it was like a contest. And when he got done with his routine, he just walked home. And they're looking for him. You know, he won. But he just kind of strolled out. And the article said when he was a child, they had him tested all the time. They thought there was something wrong with him because he was just slow and just like he is now, you know. But, yeah, he's one of my favorites too. Good choice.
I mean, he's just so, man, and so deliberate in everything that he says and does. I don't see it as slow. I really do see it more as a very practiced kind of restraint.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, when he was a kid, he was like that too. So everybody's like, what the hell's wrong with this kid, you know? But, I mean, he's intelligent, obviously, and he just he was born laid back.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
one of the things that people don't know about him or might not realize that he was the DJ on the radio of Quentin Tarantino's first film, Reservoir Dogs.
Ah.
Yep.
He's also the Canadian Mountie. He's a Canadian Mountie in Canadian Bacon.
Yes.
John Candy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I love that movie.
I know.
I don't know why. I have such an affinity for John Candy. I really
do.
Too. Carl Holt.
Me too. Can you imagine
when I was
those
a kid,
together,
I...
though? Imagine John Candy and Stephen Wright on the same movie set. They had to have each other howling.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So who goes next?
Well, right now,
to you too.
Right now I'm having amnesia and deja vu at the same time.
Well, there you go.
Okay, well, I could go.
Well,
that's
Stephen
not a
Wright.
Problem.
All right, whatever you want to do, Carl.
Since we're in a musical mood.
Well, hey, Carl, time out. Time out, Carl. I don't think I can run. I don't think I can run it from here, because I look down
at. No, I'm set. I'm set. I'm doing it. It's not a problem.
Well, no, I mean it for mine. You said for mine, because I looked down.
Yeah, and
hers,
I do yours too.
Hers wasn't counting off when I was watching it. So
okay, so no problem. I can do it. Do you want me to go or do you want to go, TC?
I'll go.
Okay, so so go for it. Which one
All
do you
right.
want to
do? Well, I'll tell you what. My first selection for this show is probably almost as old as the internet itself, at least when the sound first became available. Remember back in the day when, you get a WAV file, it would take 15 minutes to load and then refresh four or five times as it was playing? This is one of those. And I looked everywhere to find the original source of what we're going to hear, but had little luck other than someone credited the voice of Disneyland, Jack Wagner, as a narrator for this. And some people thought it was Monty Python, some George Carlin, but obviously it's not. So here's something we've all heard, but maybe not in a long, long time. This is the word
perhaps one of the most interesting words in the English language today is the word fuck. Out of all of the English words that begin with the letter F, fuck is the only word that is referred to as the F word. It's the one magical word. Just by its sound can describe pain, pleasure, hate, and love. Fuck, as most words in the English language, is derived from German, the word fricken, which means to strike. In English, fuck falls into many grammatical categories, as a transitive verb, for instance, John fucked Shirley. As an intransitive verb, Shirley fucks. Its meaning's not always sexual. It can be used as an adjective, such as John's doing all the fucking work. As part of an adverb, Shirley talks too fucking much. As an adverb enhancing an adjective, Shirley is fucking beautiful. As a noun, I don't give a fuck. As part of a word, abso-fucking-lutely, or in-fucking-credible. And as almost every word in a sentence, fuck the fucking fuckers. As you must realize, there aren't too many words with the versatility of fuck, as in these examples describing situations such as fraud, I got fucked at the used car lot. Dismay, aw, fuck it. Trouble, I guess I'm really fucked now. Aggression, don't fuck with me, buddy. Difficulty, I don't understand this fucking question. Inquiry, who the fuck was that? Dissatisfaction, I don't like what the fuck is going on here. Incompetence, he's a fuck-off. Dismissal, why don't you go outside and play hide and go fuck yourself? I'm sure you can think of many more examples. With all of these multi-purpose applications, how can anyone be offended when you use the word? We say use this unique, flexible word more often in your daily speech. It will identify the quality of your character immediately. Say it loudly and proudly. Fuck you.
Fuck you. Love it.
Yeah. That's a classic.
Now, I do have to say, TC, that you finally did it to me. You stole one of mine right out of my head. I fucking love that one. I have had it memorized for most of my life. I love it.
That's what I said. I think that was probably the first thing when sound first came out on the internet. It's like, there it is. You know, this is the first thing we're going to play. But there's no credit whatsoever to who did it. Other than, you know, I mean, I saw people saying it's Jack Wagner, the voice of Disneyland, was the narrator. But, you know, it's not credited to anybody. I looked everywhere for it, but it's something we've all heard before and certainly belongs on this show.
Oh, absolutely.
Abso-fucking-lutely, don't you mean?
Yep. Shirley talks too fucking much.
Yeah, I always fucking talk too much. Anyway, we've got Rachel only has three, so why don't you give us another one, TC, and then I'll do two.
Well, I can do that. Okay. We all know National Lampoon's movie franchise, Vacation, Christmas Vacation, European Vacation, blah, blah, blah. And it traces its roots back to National Lampoon magazine, which began as a spinoff in 1970 from Harvard Lampoon. At the height of its popularity in 1970, National Lampoon Radio Hour could be heard on over 600 stations across the country. With that success, they produced several comedy sketch albums. The track I have today is actually a spoof on Mr. Rogers, and it comes from their 1977 album, That's Not Funny, That's Sick. There were two Mr. Roberts. There were two tracks on that album from Mr. Roberts, and this is track number one. Go ahead, Carl.
All righty. Here we go.
Hi. We're going to talk about some nice things today. Did you know that? Sure. Some special things for you. Some special things for me, too. And we have a special guest here today. Can you say that, guest? Sure. I knew you could. We're going to talk today to a musician, the guy who plays the bass. You know what a bass is, don't you? Can you say that? Don't? Sure you can. Hello. How are you?
You think you get somebody to give me a cup of coffee or something?
You're not used to getting up early, huh?
I'm not here yet.
What time do you usually get up?
I usually get up when the sun is warm, like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
I like to get up around 6:30.
That's insane. You're stupid.
Huh?
You should sleep late, man. It's much easier on your constitution.
We're going to talk about your bass and how big it is and things like that. It looks like a violin, but it's bigger, isn't it?
It's a hell of a lot bigger.
Can you say
violin's a little wimpy thing.
Can you say wimpy?
Wimpy.
That's right.
Wimpy thing.
I like the way you say that. Did you know that?
I do now. The hell, you're easily amused, aren't you? I say wimpy, wompy, wambly.
I know what you mean. You know something? I like what your face does when you play. It kind of gets all sort of squinched up.
Yeah,
know?
Somebody told me once that my face, when I play the bass, it looks like some sort of like a big jellyfish or something like that. It just keeps moving.
Sure.
You can never identify what the face is, and real ugly sometimes, and real weird, looks like a fruit or something. Like it just keeps flashing at you, like rubber or something.
Tell me some of the things you think about when you're playing, though, the images. Because, of course, when you're playing, I thought of things like sheep and things like that, little candies, fresh little candies and things like that. Do you think of those things, too?
Oh, I basically think about my financial situation. I count every, like, beat I play, every note I play, and I figure out how many notes I'm giving into the space, you know, out in the space.
Sure.
For how much I'm getting paid, and I am working cheap.
Must be hard to sort of struggle to get your band together.
Oh, man, especially when you be lifting piano, man. That is the worst. I worked as a mover for 2 years while I was getting a band together. And I've also made pizza.
But now you're playing music, and so the story sort of has a happy ending, doesn't it?
It's sort of a happy ending. we just got the shaft from a record company that had promised to pay us a certain amount of royalties, and
oh,
then they said that all sorts of stuff went into pre-production and charged
that's
us for typewriters. They'd be charging us for stamps, they say, and stuff. How much
sure.
is a stamp, you know?
Sure.
I'll buy the goddamn stamp, you
sure.
know?
I know what you mean. Well, I'm sure a lot of people out there would like to know how a big, strong guy like you plays the bass so well, gets to be so strong, what he eats to be like that. Can you tell us that?
Well, I eat a lot of garbage food, but I mainly subsist on stuff like sandwiches and tins of tuna, chicken, something like that from a chain store, soda.
Do you ever have Egg McMuffin?
Sometimes, Dad, or Cheese Prentice.
Can you say Egg McMuffin?
Egg McMuffin, yeah.
Egg McMuffin.
Well, I know what I'd like to do now. I'd like to hear you play some bass.
Yeah,
like?
I'd like to do that.
Well, we're going to go to the Magic Kingdom.
Oh, no, it's too early for me. I got to drive.
Okay.
Oh, a blast from the past, Carl. Remember that one from...
Yeah, it's funny. Mike, we did a thing a while back with you on novelty songs, and my favorite National Lampoon is Deteriorata, which I just freaking love. I love
that.
I've always enjoyed your skits. So, Rach, what you think?
I love it, but I've always had an affinity for National Lampoon. My late father... That was always something he would find to put on for me, so.
Egg a muffin.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Can you say
so
that?
So I
Egg
guess
McMuffin?
It's my turn. Oh, go ahead, TC. Sorry.
No, that's all right. Egg muffin.
Yeah. I thought that was hilarious.
Okay,
all
so
right.
So what we're going to do now, or what I'm going to do, I'm going to talk about a comedian. We take a look at stand-up comedians, probably the most influential black comedian that people know and people remember is Richard Pryor. But Richard Pryor, there were several black comedians before him. And one of the people that I'm going to mention, and I have two short bits from this comedian. His name is Dick Gregory. Dick Gregory was the first black person to play the Playboy Club and the Playboy Mansion. He was definitely helped by that and was able to cross over. He played on Ed Sullivan he and a number of things, and he started in the late 50s, early 60s. But the two things I have, he's still living, and these come from the 2000s, actually, when he was more of a an older guard type of person. But still, you can get an idea of his comedies. I'm going to go straight through both these tracks, one right after the other. So it'll be about 4 minutes. So we're going to start here with Dick Gregory.
Man, I remember the early days of the Civil Rights Movement. Walked down the street scared, didn't know what was going to happen, and now look where we are. I never thought I'd see the day that this thing would get so mellow that white folks would start asking me to comment on white folk problems. I came back in from Europe last month. CNN, Mr. Gregory, you think we'll ever catch Bin Laden? I say, we. I ain't looking for him. I'm still trying to find out who my daddy is. Bob Hope, a lot of you young folks don't remember Bob Hope. Bob Hope lived to get 104. He died at 3 o'clock in the morning. AP called me, Mr. Gregory, Bob Hope just died. Can we get a comment on you? I said, I thought he'd been dead. See, what'd you say? I said, my comment is Bob Hope's family should go to Chicago and get on their knees and kiss Jesse Jackson's feet. Because for 40 years, Jesse's been yelling, keep hope alive. And he's the only Congress that lived to get 104. I saw Jesse the other day. Jesse said, Brother Greg, now that Bob Hope has died, let me pray for you. How you going to run around talking about keep Dick alive? And I'm extra happy today because we just finishing the last day of Black History Month. Black History Month. And a lot of people say, are we making progress? You know. But for you young folks in the house, it used to be called Negro History Week. Now we've gone from a week to a month. But you know when they got ready to give us a month, it'd be that month of February with all them damn days missing, right? In February, do it bother you white folks that February the 2nd is Groundhog Day? They ask yourself, what's a groundhog? If the groundhog sees his shadow, what does that? 6 more weeks of winter? Can you believe your white folks can be that silly? With all them cameras out, when it comes out the ground, that thing couldn't help but see a damn shadow. Huh? And if the groundhog sees his shadow, 6 more weeks of winter. And to think, I want to go to school with y'all. When you get home, check out your calendar. Spring is March the 21st. Count from February the 2nd to March 21st. That is 6 weeks.
And there you go. That's Dick Gregory.
He is a legend. So he's still alive, huh?
Yeah, he's still alive. He's in his 90s now.
Jeez.
You know,
yeah,
he was
ahead of everybody. I mean, it was, you know, you heard him, and they censored the shit out of him when they put him on TV. They had to. You know?
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, and one year... Go ahead,
I've always been a fan of comedians like that because I grew up with, you know, watching uncensored stuff. So I've always loved when you can tell a comedian is just really going out there and pushing every limit that they can. So, yeah, I've always been a Dick Gregory fan, but I have not heard those. So thank you, Carl.
You're welcome. A couple quick things before we move on. Dick Gregory had a book, which I actually own a paperback copy of. And if anyone is triggered, put your fingers in your ears now, because the title is Nigger. And it is a brilliant book about growing up in Chicago, being black, and what he had to go through. And it is a brilliant book. He also put out a number of albums, and I have an album in my collection, which John Shearer has now. But it's Dick Gregory for President. And the one thing you see is a sign on there, Dick Nixon before he dicks us again. Go ahead.
Carl, I'm going to come back to Dick Gregory after you play another one of your tracks. Okay. Another black comedian you're going to play, because I want to make a correlation between the two. So I'll bring that up.
I know who you're thinking of. I probably have the same correlation, but go ahead.
Okay.
But we'll get there when we get there.
Right. Okay. So that's two for you, two for me, and one from Rachel coming up.
All righty, guys. Now, this is one I have been saving. This one is the reason that I only have three picks for tonight. It is one of my favorite pieces of stand-up comedy, and I'm not sure if either of you has seen this one. I'm sure Carl probably hasn't. It's even funnier if you watch the stand-up, because the guy's doing the whole thing shirtless, and he's got, like, a nice, pretty good dad bod going on. I mean, he's, you know, pudgy, short dude, and it is absolutely hilarious. You have to get to the end of it, because you do not think that this story can get any more epic until it just gets more fucking epic. And I swear to you, it's one of those stories that is so funny, it absolutely has to be true, because you cannot make this shit up. So that would be one of my more modern comics that I'm bringing to the show for you guys tonight. This is Bert Kreischer, The Machine.
Here we go.
When I was 22, I got involved with the Russian mafia. Here's how it happened. I went to school at Florida State. I was not a very good student. I was there like 7 years. I was there in most of the 90s. I was in college longer than grunge music was around. So, this is how bad of a student I was. One time, I signed up for a Russian class thinking it was Spanish. And it took 3 classes before I realized, I don't think this is Spanish. So I got to leave. The teacher, who was hot, he definitely worked out. I'm kidding. It was a girl. It was a girl. And she was hot. She still is hot. She stopped me. She goes, don't go anywhere. I need 14 kids to teach this class. You're the 14th. I need to teach this class in order to get my master's. So if you sit back down, don't have to do anything all semester, and I'll just give you a C. I was like, Strasbucia, bitches, I'm back. So I took Russian 1, 2, 3, and 4, never learned a word. Think about what I'm saying. I took 2 years of a language, took 4 semesters of my college career, four semesters. Russian 4 was taught in Russian. Do you have any idea what it's like to go to a class and sit there like an immigrant at the DMV all day? Like... The end of Russian 4, same teacher pulls me aside. She's like, we're taking a trip to Russia. If you go, you'll get a minor. I was like, okay, hold on. You know, I can't really speak, read, write, or understand the language, right? She's like, I'm fucking well aware of that. You got to remember, I was taking tests in a language with which I was unfamiliar with their alphabet. Do you have any idea what it's like to take a test and make up hieroglyphics? And the answer is star, circle, hashtag, shoe. She goes, it doesn't matter. We need kids to make this trip happen. And if you go with all the classes you've taken and the ones you will take, you will get a minor. And I was like, oh, that's all you had to say. Let's go to Russia and fuck some minors. It was different minor, obviously. Learned that the hard way. So we went to Russia in 1995. This is when the mob ran everything, and they told us that our very first night. They sat the whole class down. They're like, listen, we have paid off the mafia to keep you safe. In exchange for our money, they give us 2 young gangsters. I'm in the room like, this trip just got fucking awesome. The word for gangster in Russian is banditi. They go, these banditi are going to live with us. Going to walk you to class. They're going to walk you back from class. They're going to take you on field trips. Walk you back from field trips. Do not speak to them. They're in the mafia. Do not look at them. Do not engage them. Do not interact with them. I was like, they're going to be my best fucking friends. So the first night, I grab a bottle of vodka and a 6-pack of Baltica, which is our local beer, and I planned a sentence. I was going to say, Strasvutia, меня зовут Берт, очень приятно, я работаю кошка. Does anyone speak Russian in here? I love that someone says no. No. I did a head count earlier. It doesn't look like it. I'll tell you what this sentence says. It's a badass sentence. I worked all day on it. Hello, my name's Bert. It's very nice to meet you. I work pussy. Kind of. It really means I work with cats. I didn't know the fucking language. What do you expect? It doesn't matter because the second the door opens and I'm face-to-face with a real Russian gangster with the wife beater and the tattoos with the track pants and the cigarette, and he just stares me up and down. A frat boy from Florida State. I was wearing a fanny pack. He just looks at me and goes, "Stole." I fucking panicked. And everything I had planned on saying flooded out of my head. And all I said to him in Russian in his doorway was, "I am the machine." And he started laughing. He goes, "What did you say?" I was like, "I'm the machine." He grabs me and he goes, "Come in and tell my friends." Brings me in a room full of 9 Russian gangsters drinking and smoking and just goes, "Stop. Tell them what you said." Now I'm like, "Fuck it. I'm the machine." They looked at each other, looked at me, and they're like, "Fuck it. He's the machine." And I became the machine. And these guys loved me. Yeah. You got to realize, though, the reason they loved me is I went shot for shot with them that night, all night long, until like 4 in the morning. But all I knew how to say in their language was, "I'm the machine." And I fuck cats. So we did everything together. Like the guy that answered the door, his name was Igor. He was like my best friend. We did everything together. We ran a pool hall scam. We stole a boat. It was literally the best summer of my life. And then one day, the whole class is taking a trip to Moscow. It's an overnight train trip. And I say to Igor, I go, "This is going to be a blast. We got to be in the same cabin." And he goes, "I can't go." I said, "Why not?" He goes, "Different mafia runs train, different mafia runs Moscow." I said, "Well, hold on. What's that mean for me?" And he goes, "Don't worry. I set up banditti. I tell them about you. They'll take care of you." Sure enough, we get to the train station, and he introduces me to my 2 new gangsters, Igor and Igor. And he says to me, he goes, "Guys, this is the machine. If you give the machine vodka, you'll have a great time." The big ear of the 2 Igors looks like a kid on Christmas. He's like, "Oh, I can't wait to play with a machine." He grabs me and he goes, "The machine doesn't sit in coach. The machine sits in first class with us." I'm like, "That's what I'm fucking talking about." We go to first class and it is pimped out with booze, food, and here's the real gangster part. Second the train takes off out of the station, everyone that works on the train comes in to pay their respects. The conductor walked in, rips off the stars and stripes to his shirt, places them on my lap and goes, "This is a present for the machine. It would be an honor to do a shot of vodka with the machine." I'm 22 years old thinking, "Huh, these machine stories might have gotten out of control." We drink all the booze in an hour and Big Igor stands up and he goes, "Machine, we go to the bar cart to get more vodka." I'm like, "Fuck it, I'm in the mob, I'll do whatever the fuck I want." We roll into the bar cart like a big dick in a locker room. Just, not that I've ever been that guy, but I've seen it. Just smack. You know the look where everyone looks like, "Oh, shit, okay. Oh, someone's here, okay, all right." Igor looks at me, and in Russian he says, "Machine, go behind the bar and grab bread." In Russian, in Russian. And I understood him. For a second, I'm like, "I'm fucking learning. I'm learning the language my way, not through flashcards and textbooks, but by joining the mafia." I get behind the bar. I'm like, "Igor, I know what you said." He's like, "Go for your machine. Can the machine find cheese?" And I was like, "Fear, cheese, I got it. Give me another one." And he's like, "Grab vodka." I was like, "I already know that one. Give me another one." He's like, "Grab the money." I'm like, "Huh?" He goes, "Grab the fucking money." And I realized at that instant, we're robbing the bar cart. And I'm the one doing it, Hooked on Phonics style. I grab the money, walk out. 2 of my classmates see me and they're like, "You're in so much trouble." Go back to our first class cabin and within 5 minutes, the head chaperone of this train trip, not the whole trip, just this train trip. He was an English teacher who did not speak Russian, who hated me before I robbed the train. She comes over to our first class cabin and swings the door open with that like liberal arts confidence, just this shit is over. You're done. You're done. Stand up right now. You stand up. Stand. You're done. Stand up. And Big Eagle looks at me confused, then smiles, takes a big sip of vodka, spits it in her eyes, and goes, "No one talks to the machine like that." Shuts the door in her face and goes, "Fuck that bitch. This is Russia." "Don't worry, machine, when it gets dark, we have good time." I'm like, what the fuck are we doing when it gets dark? Reaches in his pocket, pulls out a ring of keys, and he goes, "We're robbing the whole fucking train." I'm a good person. I don't cheat. This is why, let me tell you, I don't cheat on my wife. I don't cheat on my wife because one morning, our whole family was in bed, the dogs, the cats, the girls, my wife, and we were just giggling, and it was pure. It was perfect. And I thought to myself, I don't ever want to screw this up. This is the most important thing. This is what life's about. And they got up to make chocolate chip pancakes, and I laid in bed, and I said, I will never cheat on my wife. I had a conversation with myself. I said, if I ever get into a situation where a hot girl's flirting with me, or I think she's flirting with me, and it seems like it could go further, I'm just going to cock block myself. I'm just going to look her in the face in front of everyone and go, I don't cheat on my wife! Now, I may be wrong. She may not be hitting on me. She may throw a drink in my face, slap me, or I may be right. None of that matters to me. What matters to me is that I don't cheat on my wife because I've already had that conversation. Here's the problem. I never had that conversation about robbing trains. So when presented the opportunity, I thought I'd be like, not me. I'm going to go back and work on my verbs. But apparently, when presented the opportunity, I'm the guy that's like, fuck it, let's start with my class. So we robbed them first while they slept, if that makes it better. And then we robbed the whole train. And if it's any consolation, we robbed me too. My bag was with them. And then we drank all night long. All night long. Like literally until 6 in the morning. Top 5 drunkest I've ever been without throwing up in my entire life. We pull into Moscow at 6 a.m. I'm pissed drunk. You ever been so drunk you're like, I know I got to piss, but I can't find my dick. Train stops. Sun's up. I'm hammered. Door opens. Same teacher. Not mad. Curious, right? She looks me in the eyes, smiling, and goes, I want to be the one to tell you they've alerted the police. And I look out on the platform. My whole class is standing there with a cop talking. They're upset. They've been robbed. I get it. Apparently, they've never heard snitches get stitches. Big Igor sees this and is completely unfazed. He's like, oh, don't worry. I talked to police for both of us. I was like, oh, thank God. He cracks a bottle of vodka. I'm like, I wouldn't bring that out to an officer, maybe. Lights a cigarette, walks out to the cop, who's taking a statement. The cop is taking a statement. Igor walks up behind him, grabs him by the arm, spins him around, and goes, fuck you. We fuck you in the mouth. We fuck you in the ass. I'm like, stop with the fucking wee shit. Now the cop is just staring at me, and I hear him bark out, Pajom, sit down, sit down, which I don't even know what that means, but it doesn't sound like, you're okay, stay there. It is a come-to-Jesus moment where you know you fucked up. All I thought as I walked to the cop, who's standing in front of the class, I just robbed. Next to the gangster, I robbed them with. My only thought was, this isn't how I plan on spending my second junior year. In the gulag taking hot dicks to the throat. I get 5 steps from the cop, who looks impatient as shit. He takes 2 big-ass steps, grabs me by the arm, spins me away from my class, away from Igor, pulls me right into his face, and he goes, so, I understand you're the machine. Nice. Tonight, you party with us. I was like, what? He's like, tonight you party with us, yes? And I looked at him and I was like, wait, I'm not in trouble? And he gets so close to me, I can smell his morning cigarette, and he goes, no. Fuck that bitch, this is Russia.
Oh, Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
that is beautiful.
I know. I love that guy.
He's actually pretty hilarious, but he is definitely most famous for the machine.
I was reading about him as
woman.
I was.
She's Russia.
Yeah, I was reading about him as we were listening to that. And Rolling Stone magazine did an article on him in 1997 while he was still at Florida State University. They named him the top partier at the number one party school in the country. That's quite an
honor.
So there you have it on him.
Yeah.
He never wears a shirt.
Yeah, he is so funny. He doesn't either, and so it really adds to his bit when you actually see it, because he's just so fucking hilarious. His faces, God, the faces he pulls. Anyway, that was why I had to. I was like, I'm sorry. I will take a hit on my other pick just to be able to introduce that to the world of people who have never heard the machine before.
I have never heard that before. Never. And it does, I won't go into it, but I actually spent a night eating and drinking with the Brooklyn Mob. So that's a story for another. But I when this all started, like, I had flashbacks. I seriously had flashbacks. Very funny.
Oh, my God, Carl, are you the machine?
No, I am not the machine. Not even close. That's hysterical.
If he is a machine,
right,
he's not well oiled, that's for sure. So,
more like
back
the
to
Tin
me,
Man.
Huh?
Yeah,
that was great. That bit you just put up there has to move up into the top ten best ever. That was great.
Oh yeah. That is one of my all time faves, and I can't get enough of it. It was actually the song or the piece that I kept trying to put in yesterday when I was having all of my computer problems. So
yeah.
I literally had to input all 13 minutes of that like 3 or 4 different times last night and this morning.
It was worth it.
And
we appreciate the effort.
I'm still not tired of it.
Hey, now where did that come from? I mean, what was your source? Did he have his own DVD or HBO special, or what was that?
I think it was a Comedy Central special that he did.
Okay.
But he's done the bit a few times because that's one of his more popular pieces.
Yeah.
But I think he originally debuted that on Comedy Central.
Okay, now you got it off YouTube, I assume, right?
Yeah.
Okay. If anybody wants to look it up, where they might be able to find that to listen to it again and again and again.
Yes, it is called The Machine by Bert Kreischer.
Okay,
yep.
My turn.
Absolutely,
yes.
TC, you are up next. Surprise me.
Okay, Rachel, do you know Buddy Hackett?
Vaguely.
Okay. Old, I mean, this guy goes back to vaudeville. My opinion, and Carl, maybe you agree, this is probably one of the funniest guys in the history of entertainment.
I was never a huge fan. I mean, I appreciated him. Where I remember him most is It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Right. He was in that. He was in The Music Man. He was, most people would probably know him from The Love Bug. That was a big, Herbie and the Love Bug. And he's always showing up in TV roles and talk shows. And
know him from Music Man. We did that one in high school with my competitive drama group.
Ah. Okay. Well, Buddy Hackett, anytime he showed up on a TV show, he had everybody rolling. We're actually going to hear a clip from The Tonight Show from 1987 with Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon. And if you know him, picture him. He's telling a duck joke. And picture him telling this joke, and you'll know the part where he's rolling on the floor, and Johnny and Ed were just losing it. So, I mean, this is one that the joke works, but if you see the video of it, you know, just like your guy with the, you know, the visual, but the joke just works so well. This is a duck joke as told by Buddy Hackett.
And it's a very famous one. Enjoy this one.
Now, this guy shoots a duck and it falls and hits a barn and goes into a guy's yard. So this guy climbs over the fence and he goes into the yard and he's trying to get this duck. And this farmer come out, big guy, bigger than the guy with the chickens.
Big guy.
He says, what are you doing in my yard? He says, I come to get the duck. He says, that's my duck. It's not your duck. This is my yard. That duck fell, hit my barn. Laying there. He says, yes, but it's not your duck. I shot the duck. I've been out hunting for a couple of days. He says, give me a break. You know, I'm from the city. You're from the city. Well, you don't understand about property, do you? It's my property. It's my duck. However, I'll give you a chance at the duck. We can settle this country style. He says, country style? He says, yeah. Well, how do you settle a country style? He says, how? I kick you in the groin. The guy says, oh. And then you kick me in the groin. And we take turns kicking each other in the groin. Who's ever left keeps the duck. The guy says, well, if that's what I got to do. The farmer says, I go first. And he hauls off. And the guy goes, ha ha, ha ha, whoa, 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 nina, 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 na, 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 whoa, oh, 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 oh. About half hour has passed, and he says to the farmer, well, I guess it's my turn. And the farmer says, oh, you could have the duck.
Oh, I can hear that 100 times and still laugh.
Absolutely.
But how'd you like that joke, Rachel?
I like that one. Of course, I'm pretty familiar with that one. So, yes. Like I said, I've always had an appreciation for Buddy Hackett. But also, mostly, it's because I've seen him in stuff like The Music Man. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
you know,
that joke is way back. That joke did not originate with Buddy Hackett. I can almost guarantee you that.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure it's an old joke.
Variations of that.
Oh, yeah.
One thing about Buddy Hackett, when he was a kid, he had Bell's palsy.
Mm-hmm.
And
Wow.
That's how you know, I mean, it's kind of his facial features, the way he talks has a lot to do with that. He started out, I mean, he's from New York City, and he started out young, like 15 or 16, doing comedy clubs, and he went to the Catskills, and back in the day, you know, that was where the stars went, you know, that was like the Las Vegas of the East without the gambling. And he claims the first show he ever did there, he didn't get a single laugh, but he was great. He died in 2003 at the age of 78. So that was my Buddy Hackett. So my next one up is we're going back to the old days of television again, the old black and white TV. And I took this off a clip from the George Burns and Gracie Allen movie or television show. Of course, they started way back in vaudeville. And if you have a chance to catch any of their work, you'll be laughing your ass off. They're the classic before Ozzie and Harriet and, you know, the funny couple. But this skit is called Gracie Tells a Story.
Oh, enjoy this. I know this one.
Gracie!
Yeah?
Come, look.
Oh, George, for me?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're the sweetest husband in this whole house.
She brought her to
Gracie,
Sit down.
Hmm?
I'd like to talk to you.
Well, later, dear. Let's fix the flowers first.
But what I have to say is very important.
Well, later. Will you get me that vase over there? Oh.
Well, I guess it can wait a little while.
It's a beautiful.
Aren't they pretty?
Yes.
Well, what'd you do with yourself today?
I was shopping.
Oh?
Yes. Oh, my, the department stores were crowded today. I was at the exchange desk, and the girl was out to lunch, so we all had to wait in line, and I was seventh.
Well, that's your lucky number.
Mm-hmm. I asked the lady in front of me what she was exchanging, and she said, well, I have to return these shoes for my children. They're too tight. And I said, shame on you for allowing your children to drink.
Well, that was telling us.
Mm-hmm. Then the line moved up, and I was sixth.
Oh, the girl came back from lunch.
No, the woman in front of me went to the back
of the line. I should have known that.
Oh, and then the man ahead of me, he looked so peculiar. He had a lot of hair on the side of his head, but none on top. So I said to him, I said, my, you must have grown fast when you were a boy. You grew right up through your hair.
That was a nice way to break the ice.
Mm-hmm. And then I was fifth.
Oh, and moving up fast.
Yes, and then there was a lady and her husband in front of us. And so I said to the woman, I said, I hope that girl comes back from lunch soon. She says, so do I. I have to make an exchange for my husband. His hat's too small.
And you said?
Why change your husband? Why not get him a larger hat?
And you're now fourth.
Third.
Oh, they both moved.
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Let me see. I think I'll change those over here.
Oh, put those flowers in there, yeah.
Then the little fat man in front of me jumped out of line, and I was second.
What did you say to him?
Nothing. He backed into my umbrella.
Well, it serves him right.
Yeah. Now, and then the girl who was first in line was very pretty, but she was rather rude.
She was rude?
Yes. I was talking about the movie, so she interrupted me, and she said, have you seen My Foolish Heart? So I came right back at her, and I said, no, but if your neckline was any lower, I sure could.
By this time, the girl was back from lunch, and you were at the window.
No, I was in the back of the line.
You were in the back of the line?
Well, everybody else went there, and I wanted to see what was going on. And you know, it was a lucky thing I did, too, because I heard somebody say there was a crazy woman up front.
Never gets old.
She was the comedian of those two. He was the straight man.
Yeah.
And to see her work, oh, my God, she was so talented and so good. And they were such a great pair of them.
Somebody just flush a toilet.
It wasn't me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, man, when they had that show on, not even like 10 years ago, you know, watching all the reruns of that was just fantastic. She was so funny. She had some of the great one-liners too.
Oh, absolutely. Always reminds me of my grandmother. She was so witty, and she would play doofy like that just to get a laugh. She was a cracker.
I remember one.
Yeah.
There was one that somebody, you know, was talking to Gracie, and she said that, you know, her husband went to Yale, and the other person said, well, did he go out for football? And she said, well, of course he did. He couldn't play in those little rooms they lived in.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, boy. I wonder if their reruns are on anywhere. I'm sure they are somewhere.
Probably like MeTV or something like that.
Yeah.
Remembering
okay.
TV, something like that.
Yep.
No.
You, Carl.
So I guess it's to me.
Yep.
It's
okay,
your turn, Carl.
Yes, it is. So we're going to go with another black comedian, or actually we're going to go with two black comedians. And the first one we're going to do is Paul Mooney. Paul Mooney, you may not know the name, but I'm sure you know his work from In Living Color, where it was Negrodamus.
and various skits on that particular show. But what he really was a writer. And he was the writer for a lot of Richard Pryor material. And they were best friends. And if you remember the skit with Chevy Chase and Richard Pryor from the first year of Saturday Night Live, which was the Word Association, that was written by Paul Mooney.
Oh, really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. That was written by Paul Mooney. Paul Mooney also was up for an Oscar for writing the script to Bamboozled.
You mean the one where Richard Pryor was applying for the job, right?
Right, exactly.
And Chevy Chase was, let's do a little word association.
That one.
He said, like, spear chucker. Okay.
Yeah. Dang, honky.
Yeah, honky, honky.
Yeah. Well, this is Paul Mooney from 1981. Okay, and though it's on TV, you can still get the little knives he throws. This is pretty good. This is Paul Mooney.
No, you're a great audience, too. She was right. I think you should give yourself a big a round of applause. You're wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. So I'm a little exhausted. I'm a little tired. I may look it in the eyes. I'm very tired. I've been picking cotton all day. And no, I don't mind the hard work. I don't mind the hard work. It's the singing. If I got to sing Go Down Moses one more time. I'm glad you guys have a sense of humor. That's good, because you're going to need it. But I don't want anyone to be offended by anything I say, racially, because my parents are white. Please relax. And I have my own problems. I've got a 19-year-old teenager that lives with me, and he crossed the color line last week, and this is driving me nuts. Yes, he crossed the color line. I raised this little big-eyed boy to be a Watusi warrior, and he turns out to be Brian Gumbel. I am so disappointed. And this little white girl is critically white. She could drop dead from being white. She has red hair, white skin, green eyes. She fell asleep at my house. I called the paramedics. I thought she was dead. I know with my luck, they're going to marry and have pinto babies, and they're going to drive me nuts. I'm going to try to feed them cornbreads and greens, and they're going to say, we want some cottage cheese. And I'm going to try to teach them to play basketball, and they're going to say, surf's up, dude. I can see it coming now. But we'll all get over it, won't we? Did anybody see Bush on the news? Maybe I was at home by myself. Talking about drugs to president. Did you see this? I've never seen a president do this. He pulled out drugs and a pipe. I thought he was going to smoke it. Is he on drugs? No, it was too weird for me. It's too weird. I don't like this image of blacks and drugs. That's all you see on TV. Blacks and drugs. Police, blacks and drugs. We don't own black airlines. We don't bring drugs in this country. There are no black airlines. It's true. It's no black airlines. We don't. I know some of you are stunned. You can't relate to this, but this is reality. I want to see the special white people in drugs. We don't own airlines. We don't own big ships. We don't have banks that launder the money. We don't do that. I just think we're being used. But things are wonderful in the world for black people. Miss Black America, and we can tell she's black. Isn't it great? Miss West Virginia didn't like it. Did you see her? Oh, she was mad. The little blonde with blue eyes. She got on that telephone. Mama, mama, cancel the party, mama. That little pickaninny one, you canceled that party. And that little Buddha head came in first runner-up, mama. I think it's great. It's happening all over the world. New York's going to have a black mayor. You know that come November. Isn't that great? Oh, come on. You know it's great. It's great. The Big Apple is going to be the big watermelon, and I can't wait. I think it's wonderful. It's hard for me to watch TV commercials because, I don't know, I'm in a different kind of mood. I can't watch it because I don't like the commercials that they have for black people. To be in a commercial, you've got to be a black little wrinkle-up raisins. I know people think that's cute, but I don't think that's cute. You've seen it, a little black wrinkle-up raisin. Heard it through the grapevine. That's not cute. Poor little Ray Charles. They say, oh, he's blind. He won't know. Make him a raisin. What I say? Now Michael Jackson's a raisin. Or raising that, I don't know, but he's a raisin. Now, you've seen it. If I had my way, I'd have marshmallows with arms and legs, little white marshmallows singing surfing. Surfing USA. See, you don't think that's cute, do you? Now, I'll tell you cute. White people have cute commercials. You've seen them. What you eating? Nothing, honey. Why do you go play the piano? What you playing? Nothing, honey. You've seen how cute it is. What's white and 10 inches? Nothing, honey. Nothing, honey. Black people can be cute. We can do that. What you eating? None of your damn business. We know how to be cute. We can be cute. It is a responsibility being black in America. Being a black male, it's a responsibility. I get so tired of getting on the elevator. White people get off. I drive down the street. They turn the other way. If I stop at a red light, they lock the doors. I'm tired of going into stores to shop. I start a parade. 12 white people follow me around. Can I help you? Can I help you? Only one works there. It's a responsibility. It is. I can't take it. I can't make up stuff like this. 2 weeks ago, I'm late for an appointment. I have my car parked catacorner to a white woman's. I'm not making this up. I couldn't. I'm running. I'm late. She's running. We see each other. She turns and runs the other way. I chased that woman for 15 blocks. Someone get you, white lady. She took her shoes off. If she'd have been to the Olympics, she'd have won all the gold. Debbie, stop. You're killing me. Anyway, it's true. And I go to movies all the time, and movies are too much. I can't take it anymore. Movies, I call them white films because they get to be too white for me. 3 men and a baby. Come on. How white can it get? Come on. That's why I wrote the black version. 3 black men and it ain't my baby. Then I saw something with Jason, part 8. Now, Jason has a gold credit card. He's traveling now. He's a frequent flyer. You saw him, right? He's in Manhattan now. And they got the little music. Dun, 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 dun. Manhattan. Jason takes it. New York has a new problem. Cha-cha-cha-cha. But you noticed Jason didn't go to Harlem. You noticed that, didn't you? Because them black people were going to show Jason how to use that knife. And when you shoot Jason, he gets up. They say, oh, put him on that barbecue grill. Let's have some Jason McNuggets. Well, look, you guys have been fun for me. Thank you very much, and enjoy the show. Enjoy. Thank you.
Paul Mooney, what you think?
Honestly, he's never been one of my favorites, but I have liked some of what he's done. He did a lot of really pretty good sketches with the Dave Chappelle show, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he worked with Dave Chappelle.
He just passed away last year, too.
Yeah, it's just reading that last May. Heart attack, 79 years old. But he worked with Red Fox. He worked with Eddie Murphy. He worked with Dave Chappelle.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was reading about what he did at the Black Entertainment BET Comedy Awards. That he really, in September 2005, he really got everybody pissed off. He made up an award called the Nigga Wake Up Call Award, in which he jokingly presents an award to African American celebrities who neglected their blackness to try to blend in with Caucasians.
Oh yeah.
And he really went over the top badly. Diana Ross, you know.
But that was what Mooney did, you know. Mooney didn't care what you thought of him. And he always pushed envelope. And I've got to say something that my former partner, Stephen Ronquillo, Paul Mooney's his favorite comedian. And through my work with Stephen over the years, I've really appreciated what he's done, too. But a lot of these comedians pushed envelopes. And that's actually Paul Mooney in a very, very calm state. Okay? Now, we're going to go to another black comedian who's basically more known, I think, as an actor
because he was in Cotton Comes to Harlem and the sequel to it. He was in several. He was even in Beware of the Blob and several other films. But he started out as a comedian. And Godfrey Cambridge was shooting a film called Watermelon Man, where he starts in whiteface because it's about a white man who turns black. It was directed by Melvin Van Peebles and released in 1970. This is actually dates from a couple years before. But this is Godfrey Cambridge. And this is on the Kate Smith Talent Hour. So you'll hear Kate Smith at the beginning.
One of America's outstanding humorists, Mr. Godfrey Cambridge.
Hi. Everybody complains about television, but I'm an exception. I don't generally complain about it. I only have one minor complaint, and that is one commercial, The White Knight. You know, that nitwit on the horse goes by, turns everything white. Lord, I hope he never passes me. I got enough problems, you know. Turn me white, I'll start running around feeling guilty all the time. You know? But I feel good. I'm on a show with my favorite actress, Joan Crawford, who's really great, you know. See, that's well, like a unanimous decision. But it's true, really great actress, and I've always dreamed of doing a movie in which Joan Crawford and another fantastic actress would fight desperately for my love. It's a fantasy. Of course, I could do a realistic one. You know, maybe I'd jump out from behind a rock. But everything happens to me. You know, a couple of months ago, I was in Los Angeles, and I decided to rent a car, and I must have called kind of late, because the only car they had left for me was a 1965 red Ford with Alabama license plates. I mean, I can't win with that car. I mean, if I drive through a Negro neighborhood, I feel like I got to turn on the lights inside the car. Say, don't mess around, baby. It's a soul brother. And then if I park it 2 inches too close to a hydrant, go away and leave it, a Negro cop comes by, looks at that plate and says, Alabama, the way they've been treating my people. Then I get the ticket. And then if I'm driving by, I get stopped by a white cop. He figures I'm a freedom rider. I get the ticket anyway. You know, one of those John Birch cops who fires 3 warning shots in your leg. Do-do-do-do. And gets back in the red, white, and blue police car. But everything happens to me. Not too long ago, I went to Las Vegas in August for a convention. Took my wife, fool. And it was weird because as we're coming in, the stewardess announces that the temperature is 114 degrees. Now, the first thing that comes to mind is you say, come on, you're putting me on. There is no place in the United States that hot. But then she cops out by saying, like, the humidity is only 9. Which means you're in a dry furnace, right? So what if I stagger off the plane and I'm in the 11-button mode here with the attaché case because I'm changing our image? No more traveling in them overalls, folks. Get you an Ivy League suit, you know. No more of that fried chicken in a brown paper sack. Get you an attaché case with the fried chicken in it. I ain't giving up everything just to live with y'all. Something's still sacred, gang. So the wife and I stagger off the plane in stifling heat, and one of the local yokels runs over to us and he says,
114 degrees, boy, I bet you gotta see the show to love this heat. I said, Nitwit, we've been out of Africa for over 300 years. Man, if it ain't air conditioned back at that hotel, me and my woman will be picking it in the morning. I mean, what does he think I am, an Ashanti tribesman or something? He probably figures I'll get in my war canoe and go down the strip in Las Vegas going, Ashungalunga, Ashungalunga. With my Karari blowgun. They may come from Africa seeking white girl for queen of tribe. Pay $35 a week in fringe benefits. Of course, I had a clever way of getting back at them, because what I would do is I would run through the gambling casino and yell out hip things like, gambling is morally wrong!
shake them up. You know, I tell, you know what I do is I go up by the swimming pool and I take about an hour and a half and I put on my suntan lotion. Try to drive them crazy because they never knew whether I needed any or not. So I'm going to go to the supermarket and tell the man, give me some suntan oil, and ask me, who's it for?
114 degrees, I got to burn, fool.
Oh, these are my people. Don't take it personal, friends.
Anyway,
things are going very well now. I'm working for a first-class show, the Hollywood Palace. And when I arrived at the airport this time, they sent a limousine for me, a chauffeur-driven limousine with a white chauffeur. That's progress. And he suggested... And he suggested that I drive, and he sit in the back. And then I said, well, why don't we sit up there in the front together? That way, if people see us together, they won't know what to talk about first. So finally, we compromised, and I flipped a coin, and I sat in the trunk. Well, let's face it, friends. One thing is true, and that is, you ain't going back to Europe, and I ain't going back to Africa. We got too much going here. Thank you.
One of the reasons I'm focusing on black comics is because, to give you an idea of where they were before Pryor, and Cambridge actually was so smart. He was on firing line with William F. Buckley two times, and you can find those both on YouTube. And he went toe-to-toe with Buckley. I mean, this guy was smart. So TC, you said you might have something about a particular comic that you wanted to say, and I'm pretty
well,
sure it's Godfrey Cambridge.
Yeah, it is. And we did Dick Gregory earlier, you know, and that one was from the 2000s when everything was pretty racially cool by that time with a black comedian. But did you watch the video that came from, Carl? You actually watched the video, right? Did you look at the crowd? It was all white.
Yep.
All white crowd out there, nervously laughing. I don't think people knew how to take a black comedian back then. You know, he's up there telling jokes, and, you know, they didn't realize that he was making fun of them.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, he was busting their balls, you know, but
people
act for him. And they didn't realize it. They're thinking, the funny Negro up here. Oh, look at the funny Negro. Nah, he's busting your fucking chops, pal. You know? And that's exactly how it was. And it was so funny because I really focused on every time they showed a crowd shot to see these people's faces. And it's like, oh, yes, it's a Negro up there. And he's funny. You know, but yeah, and it was such a social statement for these guys like him and Gregory and all these guys who were talking about before Pryor. You know, Pryor just busted the door open. He kicked the door open. Everybody else is just giving little peeks about, you know, how these black comedians were so smart. You know, like, hey, we can really make fun of these white people without even them knowing it.
And the other thing I want to say about that, too, with both Gregory and Godfrey Cambridge, is there was a what was known as the Chitlin Circuit in Red Fox and Mom's Mabry.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So many of the older comedians did that because it was specifically black audiences. But it was Gregory first and Cambridge second who broke into white audiences.
Yep.
And the reason for that is because they had support of people like Hefner. Both of them were supported by Hefner and by the liberati of the time, the white liberati, who, of course, came from the beatnik era. And we'll talk about that with my next little person that we'll come up with. But, I mean, I love both those guys because – they really, if you know, Pryor knocked down the wall, but they're the ones that put the chinks in it. They're
those
the ones
jokes.
That, put the chinks in it.
That Godfrey Cambridge spit right there would not work in front of a whole black audience. Wouldn't have worked. Would have just pissed them off.
No.
Yeah. But it's like, hey, you're making fun of us. No, we're making fun of Whitey. And you know, when you're talking about that and the Liberati and, you know, like Hefner and everything, think of the Rat Pack. Here's all these three white guys and Sammy Davis Jr. right in there with them. Another
guy,
that, you know. And, you know, he made being black cool. So
absolutely.
Yep. Good choices you got there. Rachel?
Those were that was a good pick there. Which it's kind of convenient. I love it that you played those because people like Mooney and such did pave the way for people like my next comedian, who is also a black comedian, and I guess we'll stick with the black comedians and driving theme that we've apparently stumbled on. this is one of my other all-time favorites. If I have not made you listen to it, Carl, you will suddenly understand some of my random expletives. This is another one I quote from on a pretty daily basis, and I should have known my ex didn't really truly love me when T-Rex, this comedian, actually came out to the comedy club in Little Rock on my birthday, and I did not get to go. Yeah, really, really disappointing because I was looking so forward to seeing him and getting more of his just particular brand of humor. And by the way, I have to say, he does some of the best voices. I love voice actors, and this guy just pulls it the fuck off. Now, I will say that this is going to offend people of all races. Like, no holds barred. He's going to make fun of black people, white people, Chinese people, all the people. So if you're easily triggered, step the fuck off with your spooby ass. This is Spooby by T-Rex.
And here we go.
But I found out the hard way that rednecks are willing to fight any fucking body. I was riding with my Asian friend. He's Filipino. His name is Mike. For this joke. I'm riding with my friend Mike, and I cut this redneck off in his truck. It was by accident. It wasn't on purpose. It was by accident. And the redneck gave me the finger. I didn't see it, but my boy Mike saw it, right? So Mike looked back, and he was like, T-Rexy, the man in the truck behind you, he give you up the finger. So I was like, so fuck him. He said, fuck you too, but he said first. Then the redneck went flying past me on my driver's side and hung out the window and was like, fuck you, Spooby! I don't know what the fuck a Spooby is either, but I didn't like it. I was like, I ain't no motherfucking Spooby! The fuck is a Spooby, Mike? I don't know, but he was talking to you. I want to punch you right now, motherfucker. Mike started shaking his head. It's a sad, sad day. What the fuck are you talking about? It's a sad, sad day, T-Lexi. Any day a white man to call a black man a spooby? Give the black man the finger twicey? Say fuck you twicey? And the black man to do nothing about it? It's a sad, sad day. I'm like, what are we supposed to do, Mike? I'm fucking driving. You're supposed to scare him. White man scare the black man. You scare him. You hang out the window. You yell at him. He gets scared and drive away fast. I tell you, you try. So I was like, yeah, let me fucking try this shit. Some white guys are scared of black guys. I didn't fucking scare him. So I hung out the window. I was like, hey! You gave me the finger, call me a spooky, pull over. I'm whooping your ass. Yeah! Oh, shit. This motherfucker pulled over, Mike. The fuck you told me to do that shit for? He didn't just pull over. He pulled right the fuck over. He's just trying to call your bruff. You call his bruff. You get out. You try. You scare him. You try. He drive off scared. I tell you, you try. This motherfucker played two Jedi mind tricks in like 15 seconds on me. Because I got out and walked over to his truck. I was like, hey, man, he came in, gave me the fucking finger and called me a spoobie. Said, fuck you twice to me? Get the fuck out your truck.
I do what? Listen here, Jesse Jackson, or whoever the fuck you are. I get out of my vehicle, I'm gonna fill this whole street with uppercut, you hear me?
I thought I was good at talking shit. I was like, damn, for real? He got out, started coming at me, so I started back, hey, easy, killer, easy. Can we keep this verbal and not make it physical? Then he started using slang to let me know that he had been in the hood and wasn't scared of black folks. Oh, hell no, don't try to flip the script now. When I was sitting in my vehicle nothing but 5 seconds ago, you were talking to shit like you were bound it. I doubt it, look at you. You ain't got no fucking posse rolling with you. Your vehicle ain't sitting on 20s. Ain't got no jewelry bling in hell. You ain't even dark-skinned. You're all light and creamy looking. I believe I can take you, throw up your dick beaters, let's dance. So at this point, I'm like, oh my fucking God, I don't want to fight this guy. I'm scared of this motherfucker now, right? So I'm thinking I can still talk shit enough that he'll get scared and back down, right? So I'm like, man, I'm going to hit you in your chest so hard your shoulders are going to touch. Right next to a better shit talking than I were. Motherfucker, I'm going to tell you what, you ever dream of putting your hands on me, you better wake up and apologize. I'm a bad son bitch. I'm about to hit you with so many rights, you'll be begging me for a left. You understand me? You ever see me fighting a bear, you better jump in and help the bear. I'm like, God. For real? And when rednecks start putting the H before the W, that's when it's getting serious. I'm going to tell you what. You ain't never met a white man like me. I'm about to whoop your ass. So I'm looking back for my friend Mike for some help. Don't start looking every which way. Mike's in the car. T-Rex, get out of there. He puts in an H before the W. He means business. Get out of there. I'm like, would you get your Chinese ass out and get in a stance, motherfucker? Redneck was still talking shit. Motherfucker, I'm going to tell you what. I'm so fucking bad. If you're ever on the phone with God and I call, you better click over and see what the fuck I want.
Good.
Mike heard enough. Mike jumped out. He was like, oh, this is ridiculous. This is a T-Rex. Get back in the car. Redneck, get in your truck and get out of here.
Man, fuck you, Miyagi. I'll whoop you and Tyrone, son. Toot the song. Get your yellow ass back in the car before I swell your eyes shut the rest of the way. Mike was like, T-Rex, hurry up. I'd be in the car waiting. Hurry up.
He's like, all the Chinese people in the world, and I can hook up with the only one that doesn't know karate. But cops showed up before anybody could get fucked up, thank God, because I really didn't want to fight the guy. And cops showed up. All right, break it up. What the hell is going on here?
I'm going to tell you what's going on here, Your Honor. I'm driving down the street. I'm minding my own fucking business. Next thing I know, Martin Luther the King over here. Besides, he's going to cut me off. I don't give a fuck if it's February. I gave him the finger.
That's Black History Month, just for y'all who didn't know.
I gave him the finger. Next thing I know, he's hanging out the window. He's hooping and hollering. He's carrying on and such, telling me to pull my vehicle to the side of the road. So I oblige. I pull my vehicle on over to the side of the road. Next thing I know, he jumps out of his vehicle. He walks up to me. He's hip-hopping. He's bebopping. Because, you know, they're very musical people. I don't know if you're aware of that, but they're very musical. He's walking up hip-hopping, bebopping. He looks me in my eye and tells me to get out of my vehicle. So once again, I oblige. I'm being very cooperative at this point. Me and Martin Luther, we're standing in the street exchanging pleasantries. Next thing I know, Jackie fucking Chan jumps out the fucking car.
Yo, I got to get out of here. Y'all have been absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much for hanging in there with me. Thank you.
So what do you guys think about Spoovy?
That was great. That was great.
Some of the best shit talking I've ever heard in my life. And if you go back and like really listen to what he's saying, because it took me a couple of times of listening to that to get all of the insults. Like, and to this day, one of my favorites is, all right, throw up your dick beaters. Let's dance.
I like, if you're on a phone call with God and I call, you better click on over.
Yeah. If you see me fighting a bear, you better jump in and help the bear.
Yeah, man, he had zingers.
I'm
a zinger after another.
Uppercut.
Yeah.
And his voice
is
really good, too.
Yeah,
his voice was really good.
That was one of the most hilarious things about it, is the first time I heard it, like, I wasn't paying enough attention, and I thought it was different people, and I was like, oh, damn, he's good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definitely one of my favorites, and it's definitely one of my driving favorites. So it was good that we got to play that one just now, because I was the passenger in the vehicle, but I did get to listen to some of that in the car, so it's always
cool.
Appropriate for that.
Well, you turned me on to somebody new.
Absolutely.
I was not familiar with.
Well,
all right.
I can't
so
wait to see your stuff. Cause, yeah,
okay.
That's it for me tonight, because I had some pretty long pieces, but for what it's worth, I think they were totally worth it.
You did. Yeah, that was great. I mean, only three, but three wonderful pieces you found for us. Really enjoyed them all.
And I know I think you are coming up next, so I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah. So, TC, why don't we just switch off from here on in?
Okay, that's cool with me.
Yeah.
Isn't Easter coming up?
Yeah.
That's like the next holiday. Okay.
2 weeks.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, I'm going to bring up my all-time favorite comedian, Sam Kinison. He started out as a revival tent minister. Did a complete opposite by becoming one of the funniest, hard-partying, raunchiest comedians ever. Do you remember his first TV appearance, Carl? HBO's Rodney Dangerfield's Young Comedians.
Where I first saw him was Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah, Rodney Dangerfield's Young Comedians. He had everybody howling, including Rodney. You know who had to follow that act?
Who?
Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh, God.
Yeah, can you imagine following Sam Kinison?
No.
Everybody's crying. Everybody's pissing their pants. Jerry Seinfeld comes out with, have you ever did this, you know? Anyways, he tragically died. Almost ironically, he had sobered up, got married, and was killed by a drunk driver. But anyways, this is Sam Kinison's take on the Easter story and why he says Jesus was never married.
I'm reading this, and it's an exciting story, but I read it, and I thought, I know Jesus was never married. Guy never had a wife, no one. Was never married, because no wife would buy this story in 100 years. The disciples will, the believers will. No wife would buy this fucking story. Good luck. Good luck with this story. First of all, he leaves on Friday afternoon with 12 other guys. He's gone for 3 days. No message. No way to get in touch with her. He comes home Monday afternoon looking like he hasn't slept. Looks like he's partied out, man. And Mrs. Jesus is just waiting, going, okay, I guess it's day three of this show. Well, I'm glad you can find your way home, Savior. Where's your 12 friends who won't get a job? How are they? Yeah, disciples, my ass. They're losers. Every one of them are using them. You're not even smart enough to know it. Anybody says, I believe, we put them up and feed them. I'm saying, where are you at? Jesus is going, I don't need this shit. Not after what I went through this weekend. No, honey, I'll tell you where I've been. Come here. Come here. Come here. I'll tell you where I've been. First of all, not that it ruined your weekend any, but I was dead! Do you understand that, you fucking bitch? I was dead! While you were sitting here on your ass, I'm in a grave outside of town. I'm fighting death, hell, decomposer. I'm about to come into spiritual form and go into the kingdom of God. I go, wait a second. I better go back because she doesn't know where I've been. So now I gotta fight the angel of death, get my fucking soul back, crawl out of the grave, come over this shit, because I missed you, honey!
Short and sweet.
Yep.
You heard that one before,
yep.
Rachel?
No. Rachel?
You never heard that one, Carl?
Yeah. I haven't heard that one either.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was off his first HBO comedy special. He has another one, part of it, about Jesus doing game shows. It's like, remember this sound, Jesus? Yeah, boy, I'll tell you what, he no bottom to that guy.
Yeah.
So that was his take on why Jesus was never married.
All right, so I have to go with this one because you said, who could follow Sam Kinison? Well, Sam Kinison was part of what they called the Houston Outlaws. Okay, and he's from Houston. And there were a bunch of them. There was Jimmy Pineapple. There was a number of them. But the most famous one, other than Kinison, who did follow him several times, was Bill Hicks.
Yep.
Now, if I talk about my Mount Rushmore of comics, Bill Hicks is one of the four. And to be honest, he's my favorite comic. He's also the comic of our generation, TC, because we're not baby boomers. We're actually what's called Generation Jones. That's between 56 and 64. Bill Hicks was born in 61. He died at a very young age of 32 because of pancreatic cancer. And never was really well received here in the U.S., though he was very big in England. And I think you might understand why when you hear this. This is Bill Hicks about the JFK assassination.
Kennedy. I love talking about the Kennedy assassination. To me, it's a great example of a totalitarian government's ability to, you know, manage information and thus keep us in the dark any way they deem. Oh, sorry, wrong meeting. shit. That's the meeting we're having tomorrow at the docks. I love talking about Kennedy. I was just down in Dallas, Texas. You know, you can go down there and to Dealey Plaza where Kennedy was assassinated. And you can actually go to the sixth floor of the School Book Depository. It's a museum called the Assassination Museum. I think named that after the assassination. I can't be too sure of the chronology here, but anyway, they have the window set up to look exactly like it did on that day, and it's really accurate, you know, because Oswald's not in it. Yeah, so, wow. Painstaking accuracy, you know. It's true. It's called a sniper's nest. It's glassed in. It's got the boxes sitting there. And you can't actually get to the window itself. And the reason they did that, of course, they didn't want thousands of American tourists getting there each year going, no fucking way! I can't even see the road! Shit, they're lying to us! Fuck! Where are they? There's no fucking way! Not unless Oswald was hanging by his toes upside down from the ledge. Either that or some pigeons grabbed onto him,
flew him over the motorcade. Surely someone would have seen that. You know, there was rumors of anti-Castro pigeons seen drinking in bars. Someone overheard them saying, coo, coo, coo. Unbelievable. And you know what's wild is people's attitudes and mistakes about it. Talking about Kennedy, people come up to me, Bill, quit talking about Kennedy, man. Let it go. It's a long time ago. Just forget about it. I'm like, all right, then don't bring up Jesus to me. As long as we're talking shelf life here. Bill, you know, Jesus died for you. Yeah, it was a long time ago. Forget about it. How about this? Get Pilate to release the fucking files. Quit washing your hands, Pilate, and release the goddamn files. Who else was on that grassy Golgotha that day? Bill, it was just, you know, taking over of democracy by totalitarian government. Let it go. Lord.
Back and to the left. Back and to the left. Back and to the left. Back into the left.
Which, by the way, that action you see Kennedy's head do in the Zapruder film? Caused by a bullet. Coming from up there. Yeah. I know it looks to the layman or someone who might dabble in physics. This action here would have been caused by a bullet coming from, well, up here. Did you see that? Did everyone see that? Yeah, but no. What happened was Oswald's gun went off, causing an echo to echo through the buildings of Dealey Plaza. And the echo went by the limo on the left, up into the grassy knoll, hitting some leaves, causing dust to fly out, which 56 witnesses testified was a gunshot, because immediately Kennedy's head went over. But the reason his head went over is because the echo went by the motorcade on the left, and he went, what was that? So there. We have figured it out. Go back to bed, America. Your government has figured out how it all transpired. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here's American Gladiators. Watch this. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Here's American Gladiators. Here is 56 channels of it. Watch these pituary retards bang their fucking skulls together and congratulate you on living in the land of freedom. Here you go, America. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
Oh, good. Honey, I heard on the news that they figured out that the gun, what happened is that there is an echo and that Kennedy was asking Jackie what it was, and that's why his head flew up. Honey, what time's Gladiators on? Are we missing it? Woo, I'm so glad we're free, honey.
How brutal is that shit?
It's big time. And you almost, you have to watch the video to get the visual.
Yeah.
When he's slapping his head and going back into the left, you know? But, yeah. He's got the Kennedy thing figured out, I think.
Oh, yeah. Man, his takedowns of the Rodney King trial, the L.A. riots, all of that are even more scathing. Like, there's a lot of stuff that, I mean, yeah, like Carl said, he was not very well received in America because he did make a fun of a lot of, you know, stupid, lazy Americans. And generally, the people taking offense to those things were the people he was making fun of. So, Yeah, he never had any problems being booed out of small towns and stuff because he's like, if you're not laughing at these jokes, they're probably aimed at you. So
can you imagine if he would have been around the last 5 or 6 years?
Oh, God. Oh,
holy
God.
Holy shit. Oh,
you know, honestly, God. Knowing what I know about Bill Hicks, he would have killed himself before he ever lived through a Trump presidency.
He would have been killed.
Oh, yeah. Well, he did have jokes about that. He did several stand-ups where the last thing that happened is there was a gunshot and he's killed. You know, fake, but he's killed. That's the last thing in his stand-up. He knew he was going to die.
Oh, yeah. You know, he knew he had to watch his back, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, out of every major comedian, and we'll get to Lenny Bruce here soon, but, you know, Carlin, Pryor, Hicks, and Lenny Bruce, Hicks was probably the most savage of them, seriously.
Yeah,
because a lot of times his stand-up routine would just devolve into an angry rant about things because he had a lot of anger at the world. And I can kind of understand why. Like, when he explains things, it's like he just wants to be happy and floating around on his psychedelic mushrooms, but he can't do that, and it fucking sucks.
Yeah. He had too much social consciousness.
And he did. He did. And the other thing about Hicks I do want to bring out, he was actually, if not religious, he was very spiritual. You know, he always talked about squeezing your third eye and looking at things differently, and that we're all experiencing the universe as one, and we just have to realize it. Or his routine about life is just a ride. I mean, he was very special, and it's a voice that nobody else has, and he's wonderful.
And I think part of his greatness may be that, you know, he died so early. I think that's, again, what made him so great, because if he was here now, he would not be the Bill Hicks that we know and love. I can definitely tell you that. So, you know, sometimes I like to look at stuff like maybe it's a little bit of a blessing. It's a huge travesty, of course, but I really think that him not being around is what's really preserved, you know, his particular brand.
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually.
He might have been blackballed by now, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, all right. Back to me.
Okay, so back to you, DC.
Okay, well, I got another guy who pretty much tells it the way it is. I think he's one of the funniest guys on the circuit today, and we're talking about Lewis Black.
Yes.
This is his bit about health and milk. Go ahead, Carl.
I love Lewis Black. This will be fun.
Oh. I was amazed to realize that we are the only country that tells the rest of the world on a nearly constant basis that we are the greatest country on earth. And that is a little fucking obnoxious. And I know it's obnoxious, because if you were in an office and there was someone there who came in every day and said, "I'm the greatest fucker here," and you sniveling shits would die without me. I can guarantee by the end of the week, you'd have killed him and eaten him just to try to possess his power. The amazing thing is there are people who've never left this country who talk about the fact that we're the greatest country on earth. How fucking dumb is that? Because you don't know. If you haven't left here, you don't know. There are countries that may be giving shit away every day. Canada's one of those countries. You know what they give away? Health insurance. And we don't have national health insurance. And if any country needs it, this one does. Because this country is more obsessed about its health than any other country on earth. We're completely obsessed about our health. We're obsessed so much about our health that we worry about it. And when you worry about your health, you're fucking going to get sick, aren't you? I flew back from Los Angeles, and on the plane was a Time magazine. And there was a 30-page article about diabetes. And I read every page. And by the time that plane landed, I had diabetes. And for all we study about health, we know nothing. Is milk good or bad? I rest my case. You don't know. You don't know anymore. And a lot of you were sitting there thinking, fuck, I'm an adult. I don't have to drink that shit anymore. When I was a kid, you knew milk was good because there was only one kind of milk. Moo cow fuck milk, and that was it. And you had to drink 4 glasses a day. Now you don't know, because when you go down the aisle of the grocery store, the milk aisle goes on for fucking ever. There's 1%, 2% low fat, skim, acidophilus milk. What the fuck are you talking about? Acidophilus milk. Milk doesn't need a friend. That shit belongs in the yogurt section. Lactose intolerant milk. Kiss my dick. If you're lactose intolerant, you can't drink milk. So what's in the fucking carton? Get it out of there. Get it away from my milk. It is talking to my milk and making it feel bad about itself.
I love him. I friggin' love him.
He's great. Did you ever hear that bit he did with Dick Cheney?
Yes.
Going hunting with Dick Cheney.
Yes.
George Bush shot him, didn't he? He said, they're standing right next to each other. He turns and goes, pop. Oh, my God. Richard, Lewis Black is just, he's just hilarious. That's my favorite bit right there.
I've always been a huge fan of Lewis Black. I've read, like, all of his books, and he is just as hilarious a writer as he is a comedian. Oh. And I have one of my close friends actually knew him because he dined in their restaurant on occasion. And it turns out he really is like the sweetest, most soft-spoken dude.
You can see that though in him. I mean, I don't know about soft-spoken, but sweet guy, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and it really comes through a lot in his writing, too, especially there's one, I can't remember what it's called, but he writes a lot about the dog that he grew up with. And it's just a fantastic book about, you know, his love for this dog and humor, and it just, I don't even know why it was so great.
Huh. Yeah, I went through about 5 different ones. So I said, oh, I got to do the health, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And when I landed, I had diabetes. Mm-hmm. But isn't that the way it is, though? I mean, we have so many psychosomatic people now that worry themselves into getting sick.
It's all about fear. It's all about fear.
He's dead on. Yeah, he's dead on about that.
It's all about fear.
Yep. All right, Carl.
And that actually dovetails a little bit into where I'm going to go. So before we hear this, this is only a minute long, but this is probably the most offensive thing you're going to hear tonight. So either strap yourself in, or for the next 3 to 4 minutes, just mute this particular part of the podcast.
I think it's the most offensive thing you're going to hear in the next year and a half, actually.
Probably.
You said tonight.
So I want you to go back to 1957. Now, that's when this particular bit originated. And it originated.
Carl, if I can go back to 1957, I can start over again.
Exactly. This is basically before you and I were born, because this
is before. Yeah, we talked about that. Yep.
Okay. So on TV, you had Father Knows Best and Ozzie and Harriet, and it showed this wonderful, you know, male-centric household, and everything's fine, and so on and so forth. And that's not what life was for a certain segment of the population. And we're going back before the hippies, and we're going into the beatniks. Now, the beatniks were basically in urban areas, and the three urban areas in the U.S. where there was a lot of that type of person was New York City, L.A., and San Francisco. And in the West Coast, you had people like Mort Sahl, who was a political, very political comedian. I was actually considering Mort Sahl for this, but I couldn't find a real good thing. And there's also Lenny Bruce. So I want you to think about being in the Hungry Eye in San Francisco. Now, the beatniks were basically intelligentsia. They were very, very well educated. They were against this whole idea of, you know, this exclusivity, you know, picket fence, so on and so forth, because they lived in the city and it was a lot different. And they saw all the racial problems and saw all these things that were happening in the city at the time, but it was very limited. And you are Lenny Bruce, and you are in a mixed audience, and you are also have cops around you because you're being targeted for the things you're saying and being arrested and put up in front of a judge for obscenity and for lewdness and thus. And of course, I'm jumping a couple years ahead there. But nonetheless, you are here in a mixed audience, and you go up to certain people and say these words to their face. This is why Lenny Bruce is so important, because without Lenny Bruce, we wouldn't have George Carlin or Richard Pryor, certainly not at the time they came around, okay? Because Lenny Bruce was the Jesus Christ of stand-up comedians. He was sacrificed and crucified for the sake of others. So strap yourself in. This is actually Lenny Bruce. The only I just found this clip because they released actual recordings that they used in the trials against him. Now, I knew this routine from the movie Lenny, which was directed by Bob Fosse in 1974 with Dustin Hoffman doing this. But this is actually Lenny Bruce. Strap yourself in, because this one's offensive.
Are there any niggers here tonight? What did he say? Are there any niggers here tonight? Jesus Christ, he had to get that low for laughs. Have I ever talked about the Schwarzes when the Schwarzes have gone? Or spoke about the Moulin Johns? Or placated some southerner by absence of voice and he ranted and raved about nigger, nigger, nigger? Are there any niggers? I know the one nigger that works here. I see him back there. Oh, there's two niggas, customers, and, but between those three niggas, there's one kike. Thank God for the kike. Two kikes. That's two kikes and three niggas and one spick. One spick. Three spicks. One mick. One mick, one spick, one hick, fick, funky, spunky boogie. And there's another kike. Three kikes. Three kikes, one guinea, one greaseball. Three greaseballs, two guineas. Two guineas, one hunky, funky, lace curtain, Irish mick. That mick, spick, funky, hunky boogie. Five more niggas, five more niggas. I pass with six niggas and eight micks and four spicks.
And he ends that routine just saying, they're just words, and walks off the stage. It is an amazing, amazing routine, and it is so fucking brave.
And like you said, right, when we were talking about this earlier, that, you know, he was right in their faces saying this.
Yeah.
You know, they're just words.
Yeah.
We're in overtime, by the way.
Yes, we are, actually.
Rachel,
what did you think of that?
Well, I'm a little bit familiar with that one because you have been talking to me about it this week. So I was expecting that. But I think that's absolutely genius for doing what he did in the time that he did it. Like, he knew he wasn't going to get away with that shit anyway, to prove a fucking point. And even today, like, that point is still being proven by that one little sketch right there.
You know, and you look at what happened at the Oscars, right? It was just a joke. It was,
exactly.
Whether or not it was in bad taste or not, it was just a joke. It was just words. That's all it was.
Yep.
That's all it was. So Rachel, one other thing. You have a certain TV show you love, yeah, about a certain female comedian that's set in the 50s.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Okay. And talk a little bit about that and connect that with Lenny Bruce.
Well, I was telling Carl about it this week because, you know, we also talk about TV and movies almost as much as we talk about food. Hold on just a moment. Sorry, it's that season now with I'm allergic to grass and daffodils, so you're going to be hearing me like this for the next couple of months. Anyway, I happen to be a humongous fan of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I don't know if we've mentioned it here on The Rabbit Hole, but some of our other shows that we do on the Deviant Legion Network, I'm pretty well known for my love of costuming. And the costuming alone in Mrs. Maisel is enough to just watch the show on mute if you had to. But fortunately, it's also really funny, and one of the main recurring characters in the show is Lenny Bruce. And you can tell it's during a time when he's starting to go through his pretty major downward spiral. And it's really interesting because it's more of a background story. It doesn't really get into what's happening with him, but I think that that's because, you know, the onus is on the viewer. They kind of expect you to already know what happened to Lenny Bruce. So they don't really have to explain it in the show for it to be, you know, for you to know what's happening. And you do. You see him getting crucified throughout the show for being, well, Lenny Bruce. And that's actually, you know, no spoilers here because this is the first season, and if you haven't seen it by now, that's your fucking fault. Mrs. Maisel actually meets Lenny Bruce in jail. And, yeah, you know, they're both in jail for, you know, basically being lewd. And
yeah,
so I've been finding it very interesting. I just finished the fourth season, and he does, you know, make some appearances in this season, and good Lord, that is a tragic story there.
Do you think they're portraying him historically accurately, or
I do
more
actually
of a caricature of him, or
No, it's not. I've actually seen two seasons of that, and they do it relatively good. I think in the third season he becomes a drug addict with heroin. Of course, he died of a heroin overdose. And they bring that in, I believe, in the third season, which I've not seen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's pretty accurate.
Well, how else could you play Lenny Bruce but straight up with his character, you know?
Well, and it's so interesting because they don't have to do it completely historically accurately because, like I was saying, he's a recurring character, but they don't really, like, flesh him out very much. It's usually just, you know, quick interactions with Mrs. Maisel. You know, they quip back and forth for a minute. They flirt, and, you know, they do their thing. But they do it in such a way that it's like you know what's happening. Like when she meets him in jail and they're talking and kind of like going over their, you know, lists of violations at this point. And, you know, they keep running into each other in places like, oh, you got locked up again? Yeah, me too. What's up? Or, you know, having to bail each other out and all of these things. And that's kind of their friendship. So you see him in the throes of things that we know happened in real life, like him getting arrested multiple times and all that. Mm-hmm. But there's not a lot of, like, superlative details, as it were.
Right.
So I think... Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, you
go ahead. Well, I think we should probably move on to your last one, TC.
Okay. I might as well stay with my religious theme since we found out Jesus didn't have a wife. George Carlin did a nice job of getting the Ten Commandments down to two. So we're going to listen to that. Take it away, Carl.
All right, here we go.
Here's something else I got a problem
with. Might have to put some volume on it.
The Ten Commandments. Here's my problem. Why are there ten? You don't need ten.
I think the list of commandments was deliberately and artificially inflated to get it up to ten. It's a padded list. Here's what they did. About 5,000 years ago, a bunch of religious and political hustlers got together to try to figure out how to control people, how to keep them in line. They knew people were basically stupid and would believe anything they were told, so they announced that God had given them some commandments. Up on a mountain, when no one was around, God had given them the Ten Commandments. But let me ask you this. When they were sitting around making this shit up, why did they pick ten? Why ten? Why not nine or 11? I'll tell you why. Because ten sounds official. Ten sounds important. They knew if it was 11, people wouldn't take it seriously. So what, are you kidding me? The 11 commandments? Get the fuck out of here. But 10. 10 sounds important. 10 is the basis for the decimal system. It's a decade. It's a psychologically satisfying number. The top 10, the 10 most wanted, the 10 best dressed. So having 10 commandments was really a marketing decision. And to me, it's clearly a bullshit list. It's a political document artificially inflated to sell better. I'm going to show you how you could reduce the number of commandments and come up with a list that's a little more workable and logical. We're going to start with the first three, and I'll use the Roman Catholic version because those are the ones I was taught as a little boy. I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not have strange gods before me. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Thou shalt keep holy the Sabbath. Right off the bat, the first three, pure bullshit. Sabbath day, Lord's name, strange gods. Spooky language. Spooky language. Designed to scare and control primitive people. In no way does superstitious nonsense like this apply to the lives of intelligent, civilized humans in the 21st century. You throw out the first three commandments, whoosh, you're down to seven. Next, honor thy father and mother. Obedience, respect for authority. Just another name for controlling people. The truth is, obedience and respect should not be automatic. They should be earned. They should be based on the parent's performance. Parent performance. All right? Some parents deserve respect. Most of them don't. Period. You're down to six. Now, in the interest of logic, something religion is very uncomfortable with, we're going to jump around the list a little bit. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Stealing and lying. Well, actually, these two both prohibit the same kind of behavior. Dishonesty, stealing, and lying. So you don't need two of them. Instead, you combine them and you call it, thou shalt not be dishonest. And suddenly, you're down to five. And as long as we're combining, I have two others that belong together. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Once again, these two prohibit the same kind of behavior. In this case, marital infidelity. The difference is coveting takes place in the mind. And I don't think you should outlaw fantasizing about someone else's wife. Otherwise, what's a guy going to think about when he's waxing his carrot? But marital fidelity is a good idea, so we're going to keep the idea and call this one, thou shalt not be unfaithful. And suddenly, we're down to four. But when you think about it, honesty and fidelity are really part of the same overall value. So in truth, you could combine the two honesty commandments with the two fidelity commandments and give them simpler language, positive language instead of negative, and call the whole thing, thou shalt always be honest and faithful, and we're down to three. Thou shalt, they're going away fast. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. This one is just plain fucking stupid. Coveting your neighbor's goods is what keeps the economy going. All right? Your neighbor gets a vibrator that plays, oh, come all ye faithful. You want to get one too. Coveting creates jobs. Leave it alone. You throw out coveting and you're down to two now, the big honesty and fidelity commandment, and the one we haven't talked about yet, thou shalt not kill, murder, the fifth commandment. But when you think about it, religion has never really had a big problem with murder. Not really. More people have been killed in the name of God than for any other reason. All you have to do... Sure. All you have to do is look at Northern Ireland, the Middle East, Kashmir, the Inquisition, the Crusades, and the World Trade Center to see how seriously the religious folks take thou shalt not kill. The more devout they are, the more they see murder as being negotiable. It's negotiable. You know? It depends. It depends on who's doing the killing and who's getting killed. So, with all of this in mind, I leave you with my revised list of the two commandments. Thou shalt always be honest and faithful to the provider of thy nookie. And thou shalt try real hard not to kill anyone, unless, of course, they pray to a different invisible man from the one you pray to. Two is all you need. Moses could have carried him down the hill in his fucking pocket. And if they had a list like that, I wouldn't mind those folks in Alabama putting it up on the courthouse wall. As long as they included one additional commandment, thou shalt keep thy religion to thyself. Thank you.
I got no problem with that.
That's some good editing right there.
Yeah.
I adore George Carlin. He is another one of my absolute all-time hands-down favorites. I remember where I was the day he died. I was sitting in my car getting ready to go into work, and it comes on the radio that Carlin died, and I just started crying. And I was 5 minutes late for work because I sat there in my car just like, oh my God.
Oh, boy.
I walked in, and my boss was kind of mad at me, but saw that I obviously was a little upset, and she was like, what's wrong, Rachel? And I was like, George Carlin just died, and I've been crying in my car. And she was like, oh, okay, never mind. I'm not even mad at you. We're not even going to count this as a late. So that's always been my George Carlin story. But also, one of the first commercials I ever really remember paying attention to was when he was coming out with one of his comedy specials, and he kept telling the parents, he's like, all right, so if you've got kids, like, get them out of the room. They don't need to hear this. They don't need to see this. And I thought it was hilarious. And so, of course, my little kid ass wanted to see it even more.
Sure.
And that was my
sure.
introduction to George Carlin.
Well, I almost played Seven Words You Can't Say on television.
But oh, I think that's love that one.
I think that's down to about four or five now anyways. You hear shit all the time, you know. Tits.
Well, see, one of my favorites of his is the one where he's talking about health and how people nowadays are, like, too health conscious and scared. And, like, he's like, I don't understand why you have to have this, like, completely antimicrobial freaking environment where everything is sterilized. He's like, I grew up in New York. We swam in the Hudson River. We swam in liquid fucking filth.
Yep, raw sewage. Yep.
And he was like, and we're fine.
Yep.
So that was always one of my favorites of his, and I'm kind of surprised you didn't go there with that, because you did do the Lewis Black Milk one earlier.
Well, I went with the Easter thing, you know, the holy, you know, Jesus didn't have a wife,
true.
And we only needed two commandments, so.
I agree.
Carl,
I'm down with that.
Carl, I know that's one of your favorites, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he, unfortunately, I got to see him, okay? But I got to see him near the end of his life, and his wife had passed away. And unfortunately, when I saw it with Vicky, saw him with Vicky in Fresno, he was angry. And it wasn't nearly as fun. I really feel that his wife passing away really took something away from him.
Yeah, he didn't seem so funny at the end. I mean, you know, even he would even go into one of his more well-known routines, but turn it into an anger rant.
Right, which is unfortunate.
The last couple of times I saw him. Yeah.
But I love his sense of words. You know, you talk about the seven words you can't say on television. A line I always quote is, corn tits, rice tits, wheat tits, but you just can't have one.
Yeah, tater tits.
Yes.
And tits doesn't even belong on a list.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you still have one, Carl? Oh, yeah, you got Robert Klein. I don't want to blow your fire
there. I've got one more. So we went with Letty Bruce, and I thought we should end the show on a lighter note. Now, Robert Klein actually started his career as a singer in a doo-wop group, the Teen Tones. And he's actually a very good singer. He was actually up for a Tony when he was on Broadway, and they're playing our song. And he had an observational sense. He was a safer comic, but you know, he really broke down some barriers. His comedy special on HBO in 1975 was the first ever comedy special. He did 9 of them for HBO. It's because he did that you started getting this big sense of Evening at the Improv and all these shows that were stand-up shows in the 70s and 80s. And it was, and he's the reason for it. So if there's a Robert Klein routine or bit that should be remembered, this one should be basically on the Voyager out in space, so the aliens can go check this one out. Seriously,
doesn't like cheeseburgers for breakfast.
Yes, that's true.
You remember
that's
that bit?
That's true. Yes,
cheeseburger,
I do.
Cheeseburger.
But this one is his most famous. It is musical, and it is I Can't Stop My Leg. And when they did the documentary on him a couple years ago, they called it Robert Klein Still Can't Stop His Leg. So this is Robert Klein. I can't stop my leg.
song for you now, Road Cold. Woo, 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 woo. If you didn't get your lyric sheet, don't worry about it. Just follow the bouncing Jew. Stopping my leg to this woman. Whoop, it feels so good. Just sitting on the ground with my other leg. Oh, like a good leg ought to be. Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, no, no. There it goes again. Oh, thank you very much for coming tonight.
Watch the video of that. It is so funny.
Yeah. It's yeah, you really need to see the visual of that. And if you don't have the lyric sheet, just follow the bouncing Jew. I love when he says that. Yeah, he was.
So have you ever heard that, Rachel?
Great song.
I have not heard that one.
Do you know anything of Robert Klein?
No, I don't think
Were
I
you
do.
Cut off?
He really is quite a character. I mean, he's been in some films and that. He's done Broadway. He did a number of different songs over the years, one about gay marriage, legalizing gay marriage, another one about Obama, please don't get your dick sucked, like Bill Clinton. And such. So, you know, he's got some good stuff over the years. But he really is a musician and a singer, and that's him playing the harmonica, too. And he's a damn good harmonica player. So he's quite a character. I've loved him ever. He was one of the first comedians when I was young, other than Bill Cosby, I was able to listen to. And my parents allowed me to listen to. Because he was pretty clean. You know, I mean, he's not real blue, but he's very, very funny. So I think that does it for us. However, Miss Rachel, you did mention that you wanted to put something else into the audio clips, which I did for you, if you want to play it, as we go. So
okay.
Before we do that. However, I think it's time to do a little bit of housekeeping. I'm going to take it over to TC first. And so talk about what's happening tomorrow and also, you know, all that stuff. So talk to us about it.
Well, you know what? You cut out. I didn't hear you for a long time, but I think you just introduced me, didn't you?
Yes, mm-hmm. I did.
All right. I don't know what happened. It just all of a sudden went dead. But now you're back. Okay, tomorrow on Rock This Town Radio with TC. I switched it up. I was going to do something different. But tomorrow, it's swing time. We're going to be listening to 12 swing revival bands, people like Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, Mighty Mighty Boss Stones, Cherry Poppin' Daddies, and a lot of people I know you've never heard of. So join in. Do some chair dancing tomorrow night. It's going to be a fun show. 8 o'clock, Deviant Legion Network. Let's rock this town radio with TC.
That is going to be fucking amazing. You have such excellent taste in swing music. I love it.
Wait till you see some I found. They're just phenomenal. Blew me away.
Nice. Nice. So on Tuesday, we welcome back a friend of the show. We welcome back Joel Weinkoop, who is a film director and a micro-budget director out of Tampa. Hopefully his wife will be with us, but he just released his newest film, which is the Craiglon Incident Part 3, Annihilation. This was shot during the quarantine, and so he's got lots of stories about that. His wife, Kathy, should be on with us too, and I know that he's a favorite of mine and certainly of Rachel's too.
God, this man is an absolute trip and a half. You know, Carl has been saying the past couple times, we've had some pretty wild rides and you need to buckle in. But with this guy, you need a 5-point harness system because that dude is going to take you down the road so fast and so crazy. He is so awesome. Such a fun dude. Makes some of the craziest micro-budget shit you've ever seen in your life. And his gorgeous, lovely, amazing wife, Kathy Holsey-Brook Weinkoop, is, you know, not just his partner in life, but his partner in cinema crime. And I am just really excited to get a chance to talk to one or both of them again because I am gushing. I absolutely love those two, and they are just such wonderful people.
Absolutely. Okay, so on Friday of next week, Adam will be doing a show on the Cathode Ray Mission on Samurai Jack, and that should be really interesting. Absolutely. And
I might have to see if I can get in on that.
Okay, and then a week from today, we're going to be doing a commentary watch with Rachel and also, come on, Carl.
John Killian?
Yes, thank you, John Killian. And we're going to be doing the movie The Stuff. And John will be joining us. John, of course, is the head of XV Planus. They're putting out shows on the Sally House right now. He deals with ghosts and apparitions and parapsychology and paranormal investigations. But he also comes over and loves film, and we like to have him, so he takes a break from all the insanity that he deals with. So he'll be joining us next Saturday. Also, on the 13th, we are very, very happy to have back with us author Joe Lansdale. Now, if you don't know the name, Joe Lansdale wrote all the Happ and Leonard books. That was, and of course, they were the basis of the Sundance 3-season TV show of Happ and Leonard. He also wrote Bubba Hotep, An Incident on and Off a Mountain Road, that one for Masters of Horror, and also the movie Cold in July. Plus also, he produced a film, the last time he was on, we were talking about it, and I just got a chance to see it, called The Pale Door, which is running on Shudder. And I know I'll be bringing that up. Plus, he also has a number of other things happening. Plus, he just published a book, Born for Trouble, The Further Adventures of Happ and Leonard, which just came out. It's a bunch of short stories that were never published. I'm about 2 short stories into it, and it's really well done. And, of course, he is the king of East Texas, and just a wonderful guy. We love him dearly. So Rachel, what's your thoughts on Joe?
Well, as I have stated before, and I will be telling him on the podcast, look, I'm all about Hap and Leonard. I love me some Hap and Leonard, maybe even more than the next person, because not a lot of people that I know have seen that one, but it is hands down one of my favorite shows of all time. It's glorious. But last time we talked to Joe Lansdale, he promised me a Hap and Leonard cookbook. So what is this Hap and Leonard short story shit he's got now?
Yeah, he loves to cook. In fact, the first time I ever met him was Stephen Ronquillo. We started talking about cooking, and he gave me this recipe for what I like to call Huevos Lansdale, which is just wonderful stuff. But yeah, we every so often we'll just PM each other with recipes. So yeah, we've got to get him to do the cookbook. There's no doubt about it. And that's going to be on the 13th, and that's basically what we have right now, definitely set in stone. There are other things happening, but we're not there yet. So I'm going to take it back to TC. And TC, why don't you just give a little promo on your particular YouTube channel and such?
Oh, okay, yeah. And I just added new show. I went to see Cullen Hay. Oh, Rachel, do you like the video?
Yes. Okay. Like, I have played Overkill on the show before. I think it was with you not that long ago.
No.
And I probably mentioned it as one of my all-time favorite songs ever, hands down, just beautiful song. But only I don't like the Men at Work version. I like the Cullen Hay version.
The acoustic, yeah. How'd you like my seat?
Yeah, and... You feel
Was I close enough?
Oh,
yes,
absolutely.
I was in the second row. Anyways, my YouTube channel, TCC77, and fresh videos in there from Wednesday night when I saw Cullen Hay here in Pittsburgh. There will be new fresh videos Tuesday, actually probably Wednesday, when I see the Revivalists in Columbus, Ohio. TCC77, and I won't be with you folks in 2 weeks. See you in 4 weeks. In 2 weeks, I will be in Buffalo, New York, seeing Kansas on the Point of No Return anniversary tour.
So nice.
Hopefully I have some video for that one, too. So a couple shows for me coming up.
So freaking jealous. Well, I actually may have a lot more opportunity to get to some music shows. I'm not sure if I've mentioned it to you, TC, but Carl knows that I'm actually going to be moving to Memphis part-time.
All right.
Yeah.
Boy,
that's
a music town.
Oh,
it
is.
That is a music town. People just show up and play. Yeah.
I'm not even 5 miles from downtown. Like, I can still see, like, if I walk outside, I can see part of the skyline. So,
cool.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome because there's a lot of local venues out here I've seen lately that I've been interested in. So
you'll be coming live to us from Beale Street.
Yeah, right. No, I'm basically a native of Memphis. You know, I grew up in Gravel Ridge, Arkansas, but Memphis is my second home. So you wouldn't catch me dead on Beale Street.
Really?
I've gone one time, and that was for a very specific show at the Daisy. So I do, however, have a really good show for me coming up this month. And if I can get any sort of video of it, I would love to. I'm going to see the Henry Rollins Good to See You 2022 tour.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Henry so I'm a huge fan of his spoken word because he is so hilarious.
Yep.
So that might be something we can exchange videos for.
That's what was so cool about Cullen Hay and his stories. I don't know if you watched any of the other videos, but he had some great stories about Ringo. and talking about how he used to be famous and now he's kind of anonymity. He has one story about he's standing in a CVS line, seven people in front of him, you know, waiting in line now that everybody doesn't know him. One of his songs is playing over the loudspeaker. He's like, "Hey, everybody, don't you know who I am?" Yeah, it's hilarious. Go back and watch a couple more of those YouTube videos at TCC77, oh, Colin Hay, and the stories he tells.
I absolutely will. I managed to get most of my stuff unpacked already. Well, the stuff that I brought with me. I got a lot of it unpacked, so I've got time tonight to just chill on the couch and watch videos.
Cool. That's a good place to start.
All right.
So
well,
I guess we're saying goodnight, aren't we?
Well,
we absolutely
actually, I think Rachel has something to play, don't you?
I do, but I figure we can just, you know, play it out and hang up when the song's over.
Right.
I am so glad you found it. I was going to open the show with this one and kind of get you a little bit with it there, Carl. But for those of you out there who do not know, this is Carl's name song. This is Carl Dirkhafer by, who was it again?
Gaushausen. Yes, Gaushausen. And it's in German, people, and it's about a caper. It's a little small beetle. And the little small beetle needs to be in a place that's not polluted. So it's one of those songs. So here you go with Carl Dirkhafer.
There are five things you need to know to start your day.
There we go. She didn't know I had a song named after me, TC.
Oh, boy. Carl, was that a dung beetle?
Basically, yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Boy, what a way to ruin a good show. All right. Hey, I had a lot of fun. I'll see you guys in 4 weeks, but see you tomorrow night, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, okay. Man. Good night.
Good night.